Okay, so Eric Verlinde will be speaking today and has a very brief title, CFT and FRW.
So I hope that's clear what it stands for. What I'm going to talk about is standard cosmology, Friedman-Robertson-Walker cosmology, with matter described by a conformal field theory, and with the aim of understanding better how entropy in an expanding universe is realized, and also whether we can learn anything about holography in that cosmological setting. And the idea was motivated actually by looking at the ADS-CFT correspondence and the way it was modified by the Randall-Sundrum proposal to have brains in an ADS background which have a localization of gravity. The puzzle that arises immediately in that context is that since we have some kind of holography in ADS-CFT, namely there's a boundary and there's degrees of freedom describing the bulk, but as soon as you have gravity also on the boundary, you expect to have some holography also in this boundary theory, because gravity, quantum gravity, is supposed to be a holographic theory. So the aim was to try and understand something about that. So what I will do is start talk about the conformal field theory and add in the gravity later, because first I want to set up some results about the entropy of a conformal field theory with an ADS dual. So I start with a CFT with a dual description, and the CFT will be defined on a closed manifold, an Sn, so it's an n-sphere times time, and the metric therefore is simply given by that. So the radius will be corresponding to A, and for the moment A is kept constant, but as soon as we turn on gravity, this will turn on into the Friedman-Robertson-Walker geometry, where A starts to depend on time. Now, in ADS-CFT, this is dual if we turn on a finite temperature, so we're going to talk about a finite temperature conformal field theory, then it was pointed out by Witten in a paper soon appearing after Malvasena's paper, that we can describe this in a dual way as a ADS black hole, which has a metric where we introduce one additional coordinate, namely A, like this. So just to get the contention straight here, the dimension of the conformal field theory D is n plus 1. So we have n spatial dimensions and one time direction. Here we have a dimension capital D, which is little d plus 1. And so it's n plus 2 because I have added time as well as this radius A.
Eric?
Yes?
I guess I have two questions already. So first of all, this is only true for if the temperature is sufficiently big.
Yeah, all right, yeah. So, that's good.
Assuming the temperature is big enough.
So what I will assume is that, let me write down the expression for H first, and then it's also going to be clear what the assumption is, that so the duality exists when the temperature indeed is large, and in such a way that the size of the black hole is large compared to the curvature radius of the ADS background. So we're going to assume that whatever the size of the black hole is determined by, this is the function that multiplies dt squared, and if we put it equal to 0, we are at the horizon. And so there will be a size determined by whatever solution I get from this equation. And we want that horizon size, let's call it H, to be larger than L.
You're not working in Euclidean, but it's
perfect. Well, we can do that, of course, if we go to the thermal situation, I'll change the time here. But, if you wish, you can do that. But in a moment when I'm going to talk about cosmology, I want to really have time evolution in real time. But it's true that the thermal CFT can be defined on the Euclidean space as well. Anyhow, the correspondence works like this, that the entropy of the CFT is equal to the entropy of the black hole, which you evaluate by evaluating the area of the horizon divided by 4 times Newton's constant. The Newton's constant in here, of course, is the Newton's constant in the ADS background, so it's in d plus 1 dimensions. In a little while, we also have a Newton's constant for the space in here, but for the moment, this is just pure CFT without gravity. But we are interested in the entropy. And the following way we can write the entropy, if we take indeed this area divided by 4g of the black horizon of the black hole, there's a Newton's constant appearing there, but that Newton's constant translates into a central charge of the CFT. And I'm not going to put in all of the numbers, but basically it's like L to the N over a central charge C is what comes out from this combination. And then you find that the entropy S is proportional to the central charge, and it's proportional to the volume. And and it's made dimensionless by putting in the powers of L. So this is indeed a dimensionless entropy, which is extensive because it grows like the volume. And the energy, well, is actually related to the mass. But you see, when we are at the horizon, the mass can be solved in terms of whatever the area we have, or the parameters A we have in the model. And this is useful because it allows you to also express this energy in a similar form as C over 12. Then there's actually a additional constant, and then we have also V over L to the N.
I'm sorry, V is the volume of what?
V is going to be the volume where we have our CFT.
So where's the temperature?
Well, I'm going to write down the temperature. The temperature will also have a similar. So I'm going to have, instead of writing the entropy and energy in terms of volume and temperature, I've introduced this L, because that will indeed be useful for the following reason. If this is all, I could have substituted.
Eric?
Yes?
This A in there, is that the A at the value where the horizon is? Or?
Okay. Actually, if you think about the duality between the CFT and the ADS black hole, the size of the SN and is not determined because it's going to be identified with a boundary, but the boundary is far to, if you go to infinity. So if you would actually take the limit when A goes to infinity, this metric, you can see, will behave like
like an infinitely large black hole?
No, actually there's...
I mean, just the
asymptotics. The asymptotics will be like A squared over L squared, and then there will be something like minus dt squared plus L squared, the omega n squared. So what I will do is actually normal... Well, I can always rescale this volume as long as I keep the temperature relation with the volume fixed. Actually, to be precise, the time which I have in here is not going to be the same time as I have in this one.
That's what was confusing me. I mean, so your time is different, but you're going to equate When you said the black hole entropy is the same as the Hubble field theory entropy, that's at the same temperature.
No, actually, the temperature rescales just like the volume. If you would rescale everything with the same dimensionful, everything that's dimensionful, you can rescale, but then the temperature will stay fixed, just like you can see from here. If I rescale the volume and L at the same time, this will actually be, sorry, what I want to say is that the entropy actually will stay fixed. It's the energy and the temperature, which are dimensionful, which can be rescaled.
Is it correct to say that the entropy is the entropy of a black hole?
Oh.
In other words, it's the volume of the sphere.
Which is at all the size of the black hole. That's right. Actually, I think that's the easiest way to get these formulas, which I write down, is indeed to identify A in here with the A that you get by solving the equation HA equals zero. But the important thing is that there, if this would be all of it, actually, it's quite intuitively clear, because indeed you expect that entropy goes like temperature to the power, the number of space dimensions, while energy goes like the temperature to the power, number of space time dimensions, which is precisely what you would get if you have these formulas. But there's a correction to this, which will play an important role, which is subleading. It's sub-extensive in the following sense, that if I rescale the radius, and so the volume, and therefore the radius, you find that because there's a 1 over a squared correction here, that this term is sub-extensive compared to this one. It's like a correction that tells you that the energy is not purely extensive, but it has a dependence on the size of the system that also involves a subleading contribution, which you can think of as a quantum correction.
So how do you actually derive?
So I cannot check this explicitly by doing a field theory calculation. So what I've done here is use the correspondence. Mm-hmm. So these equations are simply derived by indeed making the statement that the entropy of the black hole is equal to the entropy of the CFT. And also the energy I can identify with the mass up to, well, I have to make that also precise. If I take this to be the metric for the CFT, and this is the metric at infinity, there's actually a relationship between the mass and the energy, which is like that, that mass times length, which is dimensionless, is indeed E times A, because that's precisely how you get, well, if I have to rescale the metric in such a way that this asymptotic metric becomes the metric which I have in here, then I have to rescale also the energy by the same ratio of L over A.
That's just the rescaling of the time to turn.
That's right. That's right.
Okay.
So on the ADS side, the black hole temperature, you know, depends on its mass. And on this side, the black hole, the CFT temperature is just the ADS radius.
No, sorry, I had to add a correction here as well, to be honest. It's true that the temperature which you would measure with respect to T prime depends on the radius and therefore the mass. But in leading order, because of the rescaling which I have done to get back to the radius A, it actually only becomes the function of L. And so these formulas are certainly consistent with the formulas that you get from there.
So you say E is just gotten by computing the mass in the ADS background.
And then, yeah, that's right. And actually, I'm using the fact that the at the horizon, this is equal to zero, which allows me to re-express the mass basically in this way, because this function in here is precisely what gives rise to this function here as well. So the subleading correction actually can be traced back to the 1 in this H of A.
Why did you call it a quantum correction?
Well, if you think about Well, let me actually make that remark directly. If I go to n equals 1, that's where we have just 1 plus 1 dimensional conformal field theory. Then we also have similar formulas, actually. The E times A will actually usually called L naught in that context. And then this will be a shift which is proportional to the central charge. It is proportional to the C over 12 will give you the shift in the L naught eigenvalue. Is precisely what you get if you take, well, actually, if I take n equals 1, the volume is just 2 pi a, and you can work it out that then the shift is precisely proportional to c over 24. Well, the correspondence with the two dimensions, 1 plus 1 dimensional CFT, will be more obvious in a little moment when I re-express this as an entropy formula. It's going to be a generalization of Cardy's formula in 1 plus 1 dimensions. Need some chalk. So this term is non-extensive. So we have a non-extensive contribution to the energy. And so let me write it here. If we have a non-extensive energy, which means that if I rescale the volume and the entropy, that you don't get back the same energy. So if this is no longer true, it actually means that there's a certain relation between the energy, entropy, and pressure that is not satisfied. If you can have an extensive energy, you can differentiate this relation with respect to lambda, and you get what's known as the Euler relation, which tells you that this combination actually vanishes. So in this case, it's not vanishing. You can calculate it. And it's what I will call sort of a Casimir contribution to the energy, because indeed in 1 plus 1 dimensions, it is the Casimir contribution. And you can calculate it, and it gives you a correction. Well, that's a 2 pi over n, I think, which goes like 1 over a squared compared to the volume. So it's basically this term in here. Now, the Cardy formula is the following, that I can, from these formulas, you can just simply re-express now the entropy in terms of the energy and the quantity which I defined there. And this gives you the Cardy formula. That's a good point. The effect which I'm talking about here is not a vacuum effect, purely. There's an analog of the Casimir effect for finite temperature. So indeed, if you look at the dimensionality, there's still a dimensionful parameter in here which does depend on the temperature. So it's a subleading correction, but actually if you do check the dimensions, there is an H-bar. It's an H-bar correction to the leading thermal contribution. And in the in the case when n equals 1, actually Ec is indeed C over 12 times 1 over A. And as I said, E is L naught over A. So the fact that it sort of involves the central charge in this way is why I call it sort of a Casimir contribution.
So if we forget the black hole and just take pure ADS.
Yeah.
What do you get? You get a temperature or a Casimir contribution of energy? Or?
No, actually there's, sorry, what do you mean? The M equals zero?
M equals zero, right.
Okay, so that's clearly out of the range of approximation, which I assumed, because I did assume that the radius of the black hole is larger than the, so it is, then we are outside the high temperature phase, of course, so it's not something you would be able to do in that limit. And now the reason why I wanted this formula is that eventually I want to use this to analyze the entropy in the cosmological setting. I'm actually going to erase this and then talk about this cosmological setting. The way in which cosmology comes in here is through this Randall-Sundrum type of picture. So what I'm going to do is look at this geometry and put in a boundary at a certain location and write down an equation for that boundary. And the way I do it is by adding. So what I'm going to get eventually is a boundary whose induced geometry is going to be the Friedman-Robinson-Walker geometry, where A of t, so A will indeed depend on the time t. The way I get this is by putting in a boundary in this ADS geometry, and the action describing the boundary is going to be the action that you usually add to the Einstein action if you have a boundary, which is the extrinsic curvature. And then there's also a term that involves the tension of the boundary. So the boundary has a certain cosmological constant term, which is constant kappa, and k is the trace of the extrinsic curvature. And then if you vary the metric on the boundary, you find an equation of motion. Which is that the induced metric, or the extrinsic curvature, is proportional to the induced metric. And if you work it out, actually there's some normalization difference between here and here, I think. So this condition is going to determine what the boundary will look like. And if you work it out, and that's what I'm going to do, there will actually be an equation that's going to tell us how A will depend on T. And the way I'll proceed is by indeed parameterizing the location of the brain. So I have the following picture. This is the ADS black hole. And the brain is going to be something that moves in this geometry. So A equals zero is the singularity here. And this is A equals infinity, the boundary at infinity. But then the brain will move as a function of time like that. And so there will be A of t. And the time, t prime, which is the ADS time, will also be a function of t, and this will sort of parameterize the location of the brain, because in this picture I only have the radius a and the time t, and the angular coordinates are being suppressed because they are just common to the full ADS geometry and the brain. So the full location of the brain is just specified by telling what a of t is and t prime of t. So it's like a trajectory in this 1 plus 1 dimensional picture. And what determines the trajectory is this equation of motion. And you can work out what it implies. First of all, I'm going to specify what my time t is by simply demanding that the metric on the brain has this standard FRW form, which is equivalent to saying that this part, if you work that out, so you get h of a dt prime, sorry, dA prime, dA dt squared minus 1 over a, h of a, dt prime dt squared equals minus 1. If this I can fix simply by choosing my parameter t appropriately, and this will guarantee that the induced metric looks like this simply by checking this equation. But then there's a condition on this time derivative as well that is going to fix eventually what the time of the time derivative of A is going to be. I'm going to not go through the complete calculation. I mean, there's a simple check that you can do that dt prime dt is going to be A over h of A, and then there is the tension that appears in here. And I'm going to make a choice, actually. I'm going to choose this tension, kappa, to be 1 over L. And the reason for that is that then that's precisely the choice when there's no cosmological constant in the resulting FRW equations. So what you can work it out, that this condition together with this condition now give you an equation for the ADT, which is going to be precisely the FRW equations.
Excuse me, Aaron.
Yes.
So, in general relativity, if you want to describe the motion of a thin shell,
yeah,
you have these Israel junction conditions.
Yes.
Okay, which gives you something which looks a bit like this. But you, I mean, it, those conditions require that you know the space time on both sides, and it's the jump in the extrinsic
temperature,
okay, which you relate to the stress tensor. You're doing only half of it, right? Because you're looking only on one side.
I'm looking at the extrinsic curvature that you get from one side. That's correct.
And you're not assuming there's any space on another side, or you're not using the space on the other
side? I'm not using it, although if you would satisfy the Israel junction condition, I have to make a jump in the metric that's consistent with this.
Right.
And there are, I think there are two ways of doing it. It's either gluing in the back same space back again, or having a sort of flat gluing in it to a flat one, but I think the most obvious one is sort of reflecting it. But I think from my perspective, I can also just see this as sort of a foliation of this geometry by having indeed sort of leaves that go along these trajectories, where I simply treat this as sort of a probe brain without including the back reaction on the geometry. But that's.
But how does that equation compare with the sort of D3 brain equation? The probe, you mean a probe 3-brain? D3 brain or something?
So it's a probe brain which has a certain tension. I mean, it's described by this equation of motion. But I agree, it's not the most satisfactory way of doing it. I mean, the way that
the tension is order one. Yeah, the tension is just going to backrack.
So it is going to. Okay. The if you put in this as really stress energy in the full ADS geometry and turn on the gravity, I agree, there must be a way of matching these two together. But actually, what I do think one can do as well is instead of gluing it back to an ADS background, maybe glue it to some other geometry which sort of completes it on the other side.
Why don't you want to glue it back to an ADS background?
Well, you get this sort of double picture. Well, it's the simplest way to proceed. But I do somehow think that there might be one other way of getting it where the space on this side may not be necessarily ADS. One could, for example, argue that even the cosmological constant which we have on this side is not the same on both sides, and there may be solutions that allow you to jump from one to the other. Anyhow, the equation which you get still have sort of the same form, and they do give consistency solutions when you do it like this, for example. for the ADS on this side, for the, you have twice the same geometry on both sides, that would certainly give a consistent solution. Yeah.
Just a very stupid question. Looking at your ABS black hole metric in that equation, shouldn't H be 1 over H? Or am I misunderstanding something?
So the time.
If you just set that equal to minus dt squared, then it looks to me like you want that equation with H replaced by 1 over H.
Oh, here.
Sorry.
This is the equation I want to change.
That's what they're saying.
Sorry. Yeah. No, sorry. This is what I want.
Okay. Can I ask one more question about this?
Yeah.
I think this is sort of where I'm getting confused before. I mean, the surface term was added to the Einstein action because the usual scalar curvature involves second derivatives, and Hawking said if you want to vary the action keeping the metric fixed on the boundary.
Yes.
And not having to keep the derivative of the metric fixed.
Yes.
You need to add this term so
okay.
that basically it's a first order action. You can vary it keeping only the metric
okay.
fixed. And it has the right superposition and everything.
All right.
So you're adding the term and now varying the metric on the boundary, getting an equation of motion for the boundary itself.
Well, first, this is sort of, it's explainable. It's roughly in our paper, and I think. Basically, first you hold the four-dimensional metric on the boundary fixed. In one way of saying it, you integrate out all the five-dimensional stuff. And then you have an effective action for the four-dimensional metric on the boundary, and you vary the four-dimensional metric on the boundary to get the equations of motion. That's one way of looking at it. And I think having this term here is right.
Well, I think actually this is, well, if I think about it really as a boundary, then I can even just, well, whatever, erase what I have up here.
Right. Yeah.
And then this is just the end of space-time, and this is what I propose as being the equation of motion of it. But I think the equivalent, this sort of gives a similar or equivalent set of equations, but a different full picture. I prefer sort of this way of thinking about it, where I have certainly from a sort of ADS-CFT perspective, where I think this is some infrared part, and when we have sort of a boundary in the UV part, I don't want to go back again to sort of the same infrared physics and have sort of two corners in space where we have infrared physics. But it's of course possible in concrete realization.
Well, if you really identify the two sides of that, you get one
part. Yeah, okay. So it's more like an orbifold where you have reflection of that sort. But these equations do give rise to, and that's the main point I wanted to make, if you impose this and just embed the boundary and describe it in this way and impose this equation, you get the standard FRW equation. So let me write down those equations. So the FRW equations are expressed in the Hubble constant H dot over A. And well, let me just write down just the Friedmann equation, which is, well, it involves the energy density, but I'll write it as energy divided by volume. This is not going to work. So the Newton's constant that appears in here is a Newton's constant I would get induced on the boundary. So it has a certain relation with the Newton's constant in here. And actually, you can work that out. The Newton's constant in which I call G sub n in the anti-de Sitter space is related to Newton's constant on the boundary in the following way. It's basically the product of G with the size of the horizon, so the ADS radius divided by some numerical constant. And if you plug in this formula in the expression which I have here, then the equation of motion which I got here can indeed be written in the standard FRW form without any cosmological constant. And the cosmological constant dropped out because of this choice, you know, of the tension. If you would have a different choice here. There will be cosmological constant that's basically 1 over L squared minus kappa squared, which appears in that expression.
So that's the general Friedman equation, not just for radiation-dominated universes.
That's fine.
Right, so that's,
And but, of course, in identifying this, I wrote the energy, inserted the energy in here, but then the energy, of course, is expressed eventually as certain energy at a fixed value. So you do have the usual behavior for radiation, where, sorry, I'm doing this wrong.
Couldn't you do this for any equation of state? You would just get a different, you would get a different equation of motion, so A of t would depend in a different way.
I should make it very clear that there's no matter added on the brain. The matter that appears in here is purely induced by the sort of tidal force that you get from the gravity. It's actually this term in here that gives you the radiation term. And the power of A, which tells you that it's radiation, is sort of explicit in here. You do see that the energy density will behave like radiation simply because of the way it appears in here. And this is, I think, just the fact, explaining the fact that the gravity in the bulk is dual to the CFT on the boundary. And this is actually a point that Steve Kupfer made in his ADS and gravity paper. The only extension which I made here was basically that instead of looking at an open universe, I also look at, you can generalize it for a closed universe. But let me now come to the point of the entropy and why I'm sort of was led to this question. If you think about the picture that I drew here, then you see that this, let me extend it again just to make the discussion a little easier. The black hole is there to begin with, and then we have the brain that is moving in this background. And the way it appears is that it actually starts out inside the black hole, and the Big Bang is precisely when the brain starts out at the past singularity inside the black hole. Then it expands the universe, so the the radius A increases. And so there will be some moment when the brain crosses the horizon, and then it reaches a maximal radius, and then it crosses back in, and it hits the future singularity, which is the big crunch. And so this is indeed a trajectory of a closed universe, which has a maximal radius. But then there are these two points where the brain crosses the horizon. And from the perspective of the brain, there's nothing special happening, because geometry looks just like this, and there's no signal that tells you that you're crossing the horizon. So what actually happens here is something that has to do with the entropy and has a special meaning in terms of the holography on the brain. And so let me clarify what happens at these points. And just to make that discussion more easy, let me first ask the question, what's the maximal entropy that we can actually have given the energy of the system? So the energy is the all that appears in the Friedman equation. The entropy doesn't appear. But you can still ask, well, what's given the energy, the maximal entropy I can have? Well, energy, I should say, is not really an appropriate quantity either, because energy is not constant. What is constant is actually E times A. In a radiation-dominated universe, the product of the size of the universe times the energy is constant, because that's basically how energy behaves when the universe expands. So given this constant, what's the maximal entropy? Well, from here, there's actually a bound you can derive quite directly on the entropy, which is as follows. This expression you can show is always smaller or equal than 2 pi e a over n. And it's basically by showing that this, as a function of EC, has a maximum when EC is equal to E. And so this is always smaller than this quantity. And this is good, because it actually tells you something about also the chances of having some holographic bounds satisfied in this cosmology, because this will be smaller. The entropy will also be smaller or equal than the maximal area, I should say, over 4G.
Is this coming from the cosmology, from the gravity?
Sorry, this bound is purely, doesn't have nothing to do with gravity. It is, so you mean this?
Yeah.
No, if you think about what are the constants that appear in here, this would be dimensionless, but you can do this just at H bars and C, so there's no gravitational effect. This bound is known as Bekenstein's bound, which, well, many people doubt whether it can actually be working, but it does, is satisfied for these CFTs that have an ADS dual. You can prove that this is the upper limit of the entropy. Yeah.
Sorry, there's
a big
confusion. Do you include the area of the horizon, including the brain falling in, or is it just since
it's back to
geometry? Or
sorry, I'm gonna explain. I'm gonna explain this point in a minute more clearly now.
Can you remind us what you see?
Sorry, what?
You define EC as the Casimir energy.
I will remind you. Let me just write down sort of what the definition was, I guess. So it's a subleading contribution to the energy, which is due to, well, thermal and quantum fluctuations.
And then the second formula, E is just the integrated energy density over the sphere, and A is the radius of the sphere. In the middle of the...
Here there's an...
Yes.
Oh, here.
Yeah.
So this is indeed a product of total energy times the radius of the sphere, which in the radiation, as I said, for radiation is a well-defined concept, because it is actually constant throughout the cosmological evolution. Well, let me actually come to sort of the conclusions. The entropy, as I said, is bounded by this quantity. And let me actually see how this appears in the cosmology. If you look at the biggest radius that the universe can have, this appears when the Hubble constant is equal to zero. If you look at the expansion of the universe, it has, H will reach when the radius reaches its maximum, H is equal to zero, so we can put this equal to zero. And then you can compare this expression to whatever I have the in here, which is the volume and the area the radius of the universe. And so from this relation, you can actually find that for the maximal radius that I have, you get the following formula. If I put this equal to zero, then whatever I have here, let me call this 2 pi Ea over n, is equal to this is just rewriting the equation which I get if I put this equal to zero. And this is the condition when the universe reaches its maximal radius. And so what you see in here is indeed a quantity which is like the area of the biggest sphere that you can put inside the universe, because, well, if you have a universe which is a sphere, then you can, when it's very the largest sphere you can put in is sort of the equator. Its area is like the volume of this sphere divided by the radius. And of course there's the 4g, and you see that this quantity, the product of e times a, is always larger actually than this. Well, okay, I should say the maximal, at the maximum radius, these two quantities are indeed related. And I've just shown you that the entropy is always smaller than this quantity. So there is indeed a kind of holographic bound satisfied, but except when I would take the area of really the largest sphere that's inside the horizon, or sorry, inside the universe.
I guess the factors of two work out. The Lie ray is not exactly the area.
Well, there's actually, it's not exactly the area, because if you would actually think about the volume of the area of a sphere inside another sphere, there are other volumes that, I mean, there are certain factors of 2 pi that you have to put in.
So what you're saying is, so the formulas on the left and the middle are just field theory formulas. They can take any value, and what you're saying is, when you put this thing into cosmology, it will determine a maximal area such that this is satisfied?
Yeah, the equation of motion, which is the Friedman equation, will guarantee that the maximum entropy which you can fit inside the universe, which is this quantity, cannot exceed the area of the largest sphere that's inside that universe. But that largest sphere is actually only there when the universe has reached its maximum radius. So I'm actually, well, want to conclude with giving you a correspondence now between this formula and this formula, which is the one that's going to be related to what happens when the brain crosses the horizon. So the Cardy formula, which I have here, let me write it in a slightly different way as follows, by just squaring it. It tells you the following, that if you have the following picture, that if I take the entropy in this direction, and let me draw the quantities which I have in here in this direction, which is, well, the quantities which I defined there. Then you find that the entropy has indeed a maximum, has a function of EC. So this is where the entropy is. And it has a maximum precisely equal to this value. And this actually is sort of a graphical way of representing this bound which I have. If I just represent this function, it's a sphere like that. And actually the Friedman equation itself can be explained as...
What's the horizontal axis? E?
Yeah, so, well, E will go in this direction. Well, actually, EC.
EC?
EC?
Yeah.
But then what is...
Yeah.
I'm not under the points. I don't really understand what you mean.
Oh. Okay. Well, you can vary this EC, and then you see where the entropy ends up by plotting this, following this
curve. Fixing E and varying EC.
That's fine.
The x-axis is 2 pi
EC
a over
n. Well, one can also take, well, this as a plot of what the sizes of the entropy for fixed EC and fixed E. And then I'm going to put actually another quantity in this direction, which is going to be a way of representing the evolution of the universe. feeling that this could explain this more clearly. If I look at this relation, it tells me a way in which the Hubble constant, the volume, and the energy are related. And let me actually plot this in the same graph by putting in the volume in this direction. And, well, I'm going to mess this up, sorry. Let me just tell you what happens when the brain crosses the horizon. That's actually when the entropy S, as you can see from this formula, is going to be similar, related to the Hubble constant of the universe in the following way. If I identify the entropy with the Hubble constant in this way, you find that the formula that describes the entropy and the formula that describes the FOW universe actually coincide exactly at that moment when the brain crosses the horizon. And the two equations that I have here indeed describes what I have here. I should, well, I'm afraid I'm not explaining this clearly. The motivation for proposing a relationship between the entropy and the Hubble constant comes from holography. And what I, the main point I wanted to make was actually that indeed when there is I think I missed a chance to explain it more clearly. So the entropy density in the universe is finite, and the reason why it is finite has to do with the expansion of the universe. And this is an idea that goes back to Fischler and Susskind. And so what I wanted to explain was indeed that there is what I want to argue is that there is a relationship between entropy and the Hubble constant, which if I would make this identification, the Hubble constant squared, as you see, is expressed in the energy minus a contribution. If I make this correspondence, then indeed this equation exactly turns into this Cardy formula, namely the entropy squared, as it appears here, is exactly like the entropy squared there. And it's the entropy, the energy, which appears also linearly on the right-hand side. This equation does not hold at all times. It only holds at the moment when this brain crosses the horizon. And what I want to argue is that that indeed is when there's a holographic bound sort of saturated when we hit on the four dimensions, on the world, the brain world, which you have in here. And let me indeed tell you why this relation then is logical from a holographic standpoint. In holography, we usually think about the entropy being bounded by the area over 4G. What I'm gonna argue is that there's in cosmology a different bound, and actually many people argue this. What's the reason why we believe in this bound? The maximal entropy in a certain volume cannot exceed the area of the largest black hole that's inside that volume. In an expanding universe, you cannot make a black hole that is as big as the entire universe. The largest black hole that you can have inside an expanding universe must be as large sort of as the Hubble radius that because, I mean, if you make black holes that are larger, they start to fall apart. So if you then work that out, you actually find that the entropy is not bounded by the area of whatever sphere you can fit inside the black hole of the universe, but it actually must be the sum of all of the entropies that you get if you add up black holes of the size of the Hubble radius. And that's exactly what happens if you take a formula like that.
This is not in general correct. If you have a negative cosmological constant, then the Hubble radius can go to infinity while the size of the largest, I mean, while this entropy bound still has to remain finite.
Okay, so certainly
the apparent horizon, not the Hubble horizon, that sets the scale. Now, in your example, that makes very little difference.
I think actually, if there's no cosmological constant, you mean there's no.
In a case with no cosmological constant, the difference between the Hubble horizon and the apparent horizon is none whatsoever if you're in a flat universe, or it's very slight if you're in a large closed universe.
But anyhow,
but it's not a general formula. And the only thing I'm trying to get at here is that none of the entropy bounds that you've written down are general, and so there seems to be nothing compelling about splitting the entropy in this particular way. They are all valid for the particular universe that you're studying, and in that universe can be derived from the covariant entropy bound. But they are not, for example, the Bekenstein bound that you wrote down is clearly not valid in a dust-dominated universe. Also this bound here, that the entropy is less than the largest equator,
yes,
is also not valid in general. Although that's sort of less obvious, but there are weird counterexamples to that.
Well, it's certainly true that it's holds in the situation I'm looking at.
Absolutely, all three of them hold in that situation. I just don't see anything fundamental about that particular split up of entropy, because none of these bounds hold in general. That's what confuses me. I could have, you know, split up in all sorts of different things that hold in this particular situation, but.
I mean, don't think I split up anything here. I mean, I'm talking about an entropy bound sort of on the total entropy expressed in terms of the Hubble constant.
Well, by split up, I mean that you're saying it's valid up to a certain time, and then after that time, it's no longer valid.
Okay.
And that is true for any entropy bound.
I agree that if you would. So what I do note is that when there is actually a special relation that holds when we are at these special moments, which is precisely when there's an equality here. And the main result which I have is that the equation that then holds and expresses the entropy in terms of the energy is exactly then equal to the Friedmann equation, which I have here. And it's sort of striking to me, at least, that a formula like the Cardy formula, which does express, well, we do know very well that it expresses the entropy in the usual way, this familiar formula, how the energy appears here compared to the entropy is indeed strikingly similar to the way the energy appears in the Friedmann equation. And I think it's, well, that's actually what I find, that is not a coincidence, because both equations arise actually in the same context, which is this ADS-CFT picture of the Friedmann equations, where we both have an understanding of the entropy as coming from, well, the entropy of the black hole, which gives rise to this Scardi kind of formula, as well as an understanding of the Friedmann equations that can come about in this way, So you do find some correspondence, but I actually do believe that this means more, that there is indeed a relationship between the entropy and the Hubble constant in this way. Yes?
Just to try to understand what's going on here, if I'm an observer on the brain,
yes,
what am I seeing at the time when it crosses the horizon? Is the energy density getting high enough that it's turning into a black hole? Is that what you're saying?
Well, the energy density cannot be the point. There is nothing special happening to energy density, because
it's bigger at some point.
Actually, the okay. I should make this picture, and the moments when this crosses the horizon depends on the entropy, and it's independent of the energy on the brain, because there can actually be ways of changing the entropy without changing the energy. I mean, I can have different models with different central charges. They have the same energy density, but they have different entropy. So this moment when they cross the horizon depends only on the entropy, and it's this equation.
Okay, that's being. So that means physically that what is happening?
Well, so what's happening is that the amount of entropy inside the Hubble region is the same as that of a black hole of the size of the Hubble region. So if you would go inside where the bound is violated, actually, you would have more entropy inside a Hubble region than you would have if you make a black hole of the size of the Hubble region. And there's no, and I would say what happens then is that the most likely state that you end up with is a set of black holes that form inside your Hubble radius.
So you can't go past that point.
I would argue you cannot go past that point, although if you just look at the equations that describe the geometry, nothing special is happening. It's the energy density that becomes the entropy density that becomes so big that there's more entropy inside the Hubble region than.
So a local observer can sit here, measure the entropy density, and say, whoops, I just crossed the horizon?
No, well, I think the physics should be. Well, the question is whether there's any physics that changes when we have lots of entropy density, and not without changing the energy density. And if there's any meaning to an entropy bound, it would actually mean that something can change. I mean that I think the physics can be different when there's lots of energy entropy inside a.
Can you say again what gets violated when you cross that point?
Well, it's not a bound. I mean, I don't propose. If it's a bound, it's being violated. So it's certainly true that. That this is larger than.
That's not a problem.
What this means, and actually that's open to debate, of course, is that there's a possibility of having there's more entropy inside the Hubble region than is required to make black holes of the size of the Hubble radius.
I don't understand why it needs that. I mean, this isn't this bound violated in a flat universe at all times?
I mean, I would argue the other way. I mean, that it's of course violated, but it always happens whenever you have any collapse, right? You take a star, it's fixed entropy, you let it undergo gravitational collapse, and the volume goes to zero. So the entropy density diverges. Eventually, you have more, entropy density than you would for a black hole, but that's because the horizon is actually way out here.
No, sorry. Okay. So you mean this? Okay. Sorry, you say. This means we're inside a black hole or something like that. That could happen.
Yeah.
Well, it's certainly true that nowadays, I mean, you can measure, by the way, what's the Hubble constant. The entropy we have is much smaller, than the bound is certainly satisfied nowadays.
Eric, this is the total volume of the space divided by the Hubble radius, right?
So it's actually bound on the entropy density, so I can
But the total, okay, this is the total entropy in the entire space-time?
So, yeah, that's right. So if you would, if you can put a bound on the entropy density, uh-huh. that's actually the way it's probably more useful. It's directly related to just the Hubble constant, so it's independent of any size of the system. So this, and if you measure it nowadays, I mean, this would be something like 10 to the 120. And here we would have something that goes like 10 to the 90, I think, within a Hubble. If you would integrate the entropy inside the Hubble region, you get something like this. Well, this would be what you would have if you would saturate it. So the bound is certainly not saturated nowadays.
Right.
Related to whether you cut out that right part of the space or not?
No,
it's not.
Nothing to do with the right part of the space. Okay,
because
you were saying that it has to do
with the horizon, actually. So if you, no, the part that we're talking about is a part inside the horizon where indeed the bounds seem to be violated.
But Gary was saying it's fine because the horizon is...
Can be made big. I mean, there's no signet, okay. This is just a matter of, well, can we put lots of entropy inside a region, which is more, you say there's more entropy within a region than would be necessary to form a black hole of that size. I mean, I think that is precisely what the whole holographic idea is about, is that holographic principles, that you cannot put more entropy inside a region than is necessary to...
inside of a black hole.
Yeah.
That's what Fischer Suskind and the covariant entropy bound are about, that holography is valid beyond the flat space description where you're just asking questions from the outside and ask, you know, that's true, that if you're asking questions from the outside, then you cannot put more entropy than what fits in a black hole, but we know that we can violate that if we just jump in with the stuff. And we don't believe that means that these things are physically forbidden. I mean, Fischler and Susskind for a while proposed that maybe closed universes are forbidden, but that's turned out to be not necessary.
What is the energy density again when you cross?
Well, it's a function of if you would take the energy fixed, I can still vary the entropy. So there's no value of the energy density that's, you can make that to be arbitrary low or high. I mean, that's not a function of the entropy. And so I cannot give you a fixed, a definite answer because it's a variable that I can still vary. This one, actually, okay. There's a paper by Burstein and Veneziano that do express this Hubble bound in a covariant way, which involves, think about how this appears in the Friedman equation. The Friedman equation actually has, R0 components. So there's some way in which you can express the entropy density on a sheet of fixed time in terms of components of the Riemann tensor. Well, I can point out that reference. There is a covariant form of this bound. So
if it is... R0 equals T0, it will give you some rational state for the maximum density.
So yeah, you can either express it in terms of T naught naught or S naught. I mean, if the...
What kind of matter would it be? Sorry. What kind of state?
Sorry, you mean what? The...
If you assume that this bound is saturated, it's an equational state.
Oh, yeah. This is the equation. Sorry, this is what is the equation of state. So you get, actually, if you... I mean, that's actually the way of summarizing what I have. Is that if you saturate this bound and you plug it into the Friedman equation, you get an equation of state that is this equation of state, which is satisfied by CFTs with an ADS dual. So there is actually a way that when the bound is saturated, that a gravitational equation becomes an equation of state, which is indeed an equation satisfied in particular kinds of matter.
Aaron, I'm trying to just being very stupid. Isn't H0 at the maximum expansion?
Sorry, that was just one particular check on the maximal entropy which I can have given the maximal size of the universe.
But I'm just looking at your back.
Oh.
I mean, you were saying it's violated when you're inside the horizon, but
okay.
H is zero outside the horizon. So I'm being confused.
There's a condition when this bound should be a hole or not. I mean, there's the condition is that we are in a region of strong gravity. For that actually you should read the paper where there's more thorough discussion of that. But then, I shouldn't draw the picture here. There's actually
H is negative for half of this trajectory.
Sorry.
H is negative for half of this trajectory.
There's an absolute value, but there's even a condition, which is that if you take the size of the universe, if you could look at the radius of the universe compared to the Hubble radius, that this would be larger than one. I mean, if you would go to the region where the size of the universe is smaller than the Hubble region, then the whole argumentation for this bound actually falls down, because here I've assumed that I can fit many Hubble regions.
Can you draw that region on your Penrose diagram? That is a region outside of the
before you cross the horizon and after you cross it again, right?
Well, I should then complete. I can actually draw it best here. If I would make the following. Okay. There's actually 2 points in here when this equality holds. And so where you go from a region of what I would call strong gravity to weak gravity. And this is so there's a part where the universe is very big when the Hubble constant is small and therefore the inverse, well, the Hubble radius is big, that we we shouldn't put this bound. There's actually other bound that one can put in that regime that does hold. But the certainly it's a system of weak gravity because it's a very big universe with a Hubble radius that's even much larger. Mm-hmm. And so these points are not, I mean, certainly should be later than these points where we cross the horizon. So the points we're discussing were actually the points which are in the region where this is still much larger than one.
So there's some sort of a hyperboloid or something
involved?
H A equal
1. You mean in here, whether there's, I have not enough, no geometric picture of what that region corresponds to. I mean, you can, well, work that out if you want, but it actually is, again, a function of, the particular model I'm considering.
If you consider the Raphael's bound to be the ultimate benchmark, have you found some cases that violate his bound, or have you improved his bound for some special context, or is there any relation?
There is a relation which I wanted to point out, but okay, it's probably too late to go into detail. There's actually a relation which you would sort of believe in an infinitesimal version of that bound, which I think Raphael doesn't. And then you can actually see that the two bounds are, I would say it's an infinitesimal version of that bound where you believe that if I look at changes in the area and changes of entropy, that there's even a bound that's being satisfied. So if I look at the horizon, which where you throw in a little bit of entropy and the area changes a little bit, that there's even a bound from those two infinitesimal increases, you would actually arrive precisely at this bound. So I would say this bound would imply Raphael's bound. You don't think so?
absolutely not. First of all, this bound isn't always correct. It happens to be correct in the universe that you're studying, but it's not correct in the interior of black holes. And it's not, I mean, as we've just discussed, it happens to be correct sometimes, but not at other times.
Right, and I don't think you've given a clear understanding of why, you know, why we have an independent criteria of when we expect it to be correct and when we don't expect it to be correct, other than actually checking and looking at the solution and seeing where it's violated. But with regard to whether it can be derived from the covariant entropy bound via some infinitesimal method where you're saying that you start with some area A, you follow the light rays a little bit, the area changes a little bit, and you compute the difference between the areas and say that that has to bound the entropy on that tiny infinitesimal light sheet.
Yes.
The problem with that is that you can find easily counterexamples to that, and that was first done by a student at Cambridge, I believe. Because this bound was written down by Walt.
Absolutely.
An easy counterexample is if you pick the equator of the three sphere at the time of largest expansion.
Yeah.
In which case you know that the expansion of the light rays is zero in all four directions just by symmetry. Okay. And now the change in the area of that starting area is quadratic in the affine parameter because of that. While the change in the entropy is going to be linear, so if you just take a small enough infinitesimal distance, it necessarily is violated.
Actually, it's related to this other point that actually the when there's no expansion, I mean, there's certainly not this bound.
Jumping out the whole region.
Anyhow, but...
Can you find one single analytic expression that covers the whole region?
Yes, actually, there is a bound which
has a general expression covering everything,
which applies to this situation.
Yeah. All situations.
You can derive all three bounds that you've written down from this bound, but you need to put in the fact that you're in this particular solution.
All right.
And then it will tell you where they hold in the solution and why they don't hold in some other solutions at all. I would be perfectly happy if you said that you found a way of identifying the split up in different energies with a certain split into sources of entropy in the universe.
I have a feeling we should discuss this in private, actually. So I'll finish actually.